And good afternoon, and welcome to another edition of Fired Up. I'm Steve, I'm your host, as always, and we're here looking at the politics of America from the perspective of getting underneath the hood. And on this day, on this Monday, we are going to take a special look at the Martin Luther King Jr. holiday and Dr. Martin Luther King himself. I would be totally remiss if we did not have a show that recognized and honored what is clearly one of the iconic figures of American history. To those of you who are regular listeners here on WJMSradio.com, you know that this show, we do not talk about specific individuals unless they are directly involved with the subject matter. And since we are going to be talking about Dr. Martin Luther King, I definitely will be departing from that practice for this show, really to have a discussion with you about the Martin Luther King Jr. holiday. And in a broad sense, we're going to take a look at Dr. King, his life and his legacy, from at least the perspective of, you know, activism and community involvement and those kinds of things. So to start it off, let's take a look at how we got to having this Martin Luther King Jr. Day holiday. Actually, it was a long, hard-fought struggle to get this day put into place. It actually was more than a 20-year process from shortly after the day in April 1968 when Dr. King was assassinated in Memphis. And really, that literally started the ball rolling. Dr. King was assassinated on April 4th, 1968 in Memphis, Tennessee. And literally 4 days later, on April 8th, 1968, Representative John Conyers, a Democrat from Michigan, introduced legislation for a federal holiday, according to information that comes out of the King Center. The next year, January 15th, 1969, ceremonies celebrating King's birthday were launched, starting with the King Center in Alabama, and over the course of time spread to some 17 other states as the pressure and politics of getting a national holiday to recognize Dr. King grew in strength and grew in intensity. And in order to get an understanding of why this was such a lengthy process, you have to keep in mind that, you know, while we look at Dr. King today as an icon for democracy and for the rights of, you know, poor and disenfranchised and people of color in our country, in the 1960s and 1970s, he was still a very controversial figure and did not get, you know, full across the board recognition for, you know, the efforts that he undertook and the things that he created and put in place until, you know, much later after his death. Many in Congress didn't want to actually recognize an African American that was thought of as a troublemaker by some in the, you know, in the contemporary time period in which he lived. So, you know, it was, you know, put into a legislation on April 8th, 1968, and through the 1970s, only a few states, you know, Massachusetts, Connecticut, and Illinois were the first states to enact statewide King holidays, but Congress still failed to act. 11 years later, then-President Jimmy Carter called on Congress to vote on the King holiday bill. Not everyone was on board, and the bill was defeated by 5 votes in the House in November of 1979, nearly 11 years after the original issuance of the bill to make the holiday appear. You know, in all of the time, there were people, you know, such as Dr. King's widow, Coretta Scott King, and others that were fighting and pressing to get approval of a national holiday. And they testified before Congress many times to try and get this changed. Years later, now we're in 1983, when, you know, Coretta Scott King embraced the idea that was put forward by the singer Stevie Wonder to, you know, have a song celebrating Dr. King and celebrating the need to have a holiday of recognition. And that occurred and culminated in his performance of the song on the steps of the U.S. Capitol building on November 3rd in 1983, and marking, you know, that as the milestone where President Ronald Reagan had signed the bill making the civil rights leader's birthday, January 15th, a national holiday. So, you know, it was an outpouring of public and media pressure through music and through the popularity at the time of Stevie Wonder that, you know, the King holiday gained its final amount of traction and actually became law. In 1982, Coretta Scott King and Stevie Wonder delivered a petition with 6 million signatures in favor of the holiday to the Speaker of the House. And on November 3rd, 1983, President Ronald Reagan signed the bill, which had made its way through the House and Senate, marking the third Monday of January as Martin Luther King Jr. Day. That holiday was set to commence nationally in 1986. You know, again, 3 years after that fact, the first national Martin Luther King Jr. holiday was observed. It was moved to Monday, even though Dr. King's actual birthday is January 15th. The bill celebrates it on the third Monday of the month, and it was included under a legislation for Monday holidays that included Memorial Day, Labor Day, and Veterans Day. To stabilize and make uniform the celebration of these national holidays in the country. From 1968 to 1986, some 18 years after the death of Dr. King, America finally had a holiday celebrating his life and also celebrating the things that he stood for. The Martin Luther King holiday was not originally intended to be just a have a day off, you know, go have a cookout and, you know, chill. The objective has always been with this holiday that it should be a day of service, that it should be a day where, you know, we focus on the needs of our communities and find effective and active ways to improve the situations there. Whether, you know, it's as we say in this program all the time, it's getting involved, getting educated, getting engaged. The idea was that this birthday celebration should, you know, and to honor the legacy and the memory of Dr. King should be an advancement of his ideas and goals and dreams for America as a whole. So as we sit here now in this year of 2020 on this Martin Luther King Jr. Day holiday, the question we have to ask is, what are we doing? What have we done and what are we going to do to further the legacy, further the ideals of what Dr. King stood for and what he gave his life for, that Dr. King intended us to follow and work on through his life and beyond? You know, it's an interesting question. It's one of many that continue to surface constantly, but particular focus every third Monday in January, the question gets raised, you know, what have we done since Dr. King was assassinated to further advance the ideals that he expressed? And, you know, to be fair and to be truthful, you know, the communities of color in general and Black people in America in particular have made many tremendous strides in, you know, in being included and gaining inclusion both socially, politically, in the communities, in government, in business. You know, we have seen an expansion of the number of members of the Congressional Black Caucus in the House and Senate in Washington, D.C. We have seen a surge in the number of Black governors that have been elected over the years in individual states, including the states where really sort of the cradle of Jim Crow and post-Reconstruction suppression and racial tension since the 1960s and 70s. We have seen an explosion of the number of affluent people of color in this country, although, you know, their impact, you know, can be argued as to how much have they really done. They have done quite a bit. You can look no further to the recent action of a black billionaire to pay off the college debt of an entire graduating class at Morgan State University in the last 2 years, and realize that we have made tremendous strides. However, full comma, there is still a very long way to go. You know, and if we look back at history, if we look back at the day of the march on Washington, D.C. in 1963, you know, 5 years before he was assassinated, Dr. King participated in a march on Washington where he gave, you know, his most famous speech, which, you know, by the time of day that this show is airing, you've probably heard a dozen times already, the so-called I Have a Dream speech. We're going to get into that in a few minutes because there's some things I do want to talk about that speech. But that march wasn't about Dr. King at all. He was one of 10 participants that day speaking at the podium on the subject of jobs, peace, justice, and freedom. And if you go back and do some searching on, you know, 1963 March on Washington, look at the images that come up. And what you will see is that the banners and signs that the people who were in attendance were carrying were not just about racial justice. They were about jobs. They were about housing. They were anti-bias. They were anti-discrimination. They were anti-Jim Crow. This was a march that intended to address the bleeding issues of America at that time, where people of color in general and black people in particular were still subject and subjugated and intimidated and marginalized and beaten and killed and maimed. You know, go back and look at the images that show marchers being doused with fire hoses and having dogs set upon them, men, women, children. This was the America of 1963, or actually of the 50s and 60s, that Dr. King and many other leaders were struggling against. Dr. King was probably the most visible and arguably has been held up as kind of, quote, the leader, close quote, of, you know, the black movement, the civil rights movement of the 1960s. But he was not alone. There were many, many others in the chorus of people that were speaking to America to right the wrongs of that time. You know, you need look no further than leaders such as Bayard Rustin, Stokely Carmichael, H. Rapp Brown, Medgar Evers, A. Philip Randolph. There were many, many voices that had been speaking out against the segregationist policies of the United States of America at that time. Martin Luther King happened to be probably the most visible, arguably one of the most eloquent. It is clear that he is continually listed, you know, in the top 10 orators of all time, and he's there for a reason. No one can deny the fact that Martin Luther King could speak words that brought power. You know, his speeches are still studied and replayed and analyzed as evidence of some of the greatest oratory ever given to in the history of the human race. So, I mean, there was a lot going on at that time. There was a just general pulse in this country of, you know, anxiety and fear and anger. And truthfully, in looking over the last 10 years of current American history, it evokes many of those same elements. I happen to be of an age where I grew up through the 60s and 70s, and even though I was young at the time, when Martin Luther King spoke his words on the mall in Washington, D.C., I was about 7 years old, and I remember seeing it on television. They did show it on the nightly news that night, but I wasn't really aware at that age of the power and import of his words as I am now. In 1968, when he was assassinated, now, I'm 12 years old, I'm a little bit older and wiser, and I understood the gravity of that situation. I understood in a basic sense what it meant. But of course, it's the wisdom of age that lets me look back and see really what that meant in terms of the fabric of our country and how it was irrevocably changed on that day in 1968. That summer was a brutal summer, and we can talk about that in a future episode, but suffice to say, there was a real sense that, are we going to survive? And we've kind of come back around that circle with some of the actions and activities we've seen in the last 10 years, particularly when it comes to the treatment of people of color by law enforcement in this country, and the treatment of the disenfranchised and marginalized by our government in terms of programs being cut or drastically curtailed, in terms of what is happening with America's reputation in the world, in term for our foreign policy and so forth. There are a lot of things today that are, for those of us who are old enough to recall and remember going through and living through the America of the 1960s and 70s, there are a lot of parallels that we see. And in some cases and sometimes, that can be a very scary thing. So, to bring this back full circle, we celebrate Martin Luther King Day, as a holiday, as a day to stop and reflect on who Dr. King was, what he stood for, his legacy going forward, and what we need to be doing as people of color, as concerned citizens, as activist citizens in this country. What do we need to be doing in order to further the legacy of Dr. King? So, we'll drop a couple of items on that in our call to action segment, but that was the first thing that I did want to talk about. So we're going to take a break. Normally this would be where I would play music, but what I'm going to play for the break this time, and it's an extended break, and I ask please to focus and pay attention on it. I'm going to play the full unedited speech that Dr. King gave on that day in 1963 on the mall in Washington, D.C. We've all heard, and as I said, by now you've probably heard a dozen times, the I Have a Dream segment of that speech. Bear in mind, that speech that we've heard is really about a third of what the total speech was, and it actually wasn't the entire focus of what Dr. King intended his message to be that day. So we're going to take a break. I'm going to play the speech in its entirety. When we come back on the other side, then we're going to break that down and talk about it in terms of what was going on then and what's happening now. You're listening to Fire It Up. This is Steve. We'll be right back as we celebrate Martin Luther King Day and remember the legacy of Dr. King here on WJMS Radio. We'll see you right after the break.
I have the pleasure to present to you Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr.
I am happy to join with you today in what will go down in history as the greatest demonstration for freedom in the history of our nation. Five score years ago, a great American in whose symbolic shadow we stand today signed the Emancipation Proclamation. This momentous decree came as a great beacon light of hope to millions of Negro slaves who had been seared in the flames of withering injustice. It came as a joyous daybreak to end the long night of their captivity. But 100 years later, the Negro still is not free. 100 years later, the life of the Negro is still sadly crippled by the manacles of segregation and the chains of discrimination. 100 years later, the Negro lives on a lonely island of poverty in the midst of a vast ocean of material prosperity. 100 years later, the Negro has still languished in the corners of American society and finds himself in exile in his own land. And so we've come here today to dramatize a shameful condition. In a sense, we've come to our nation's capital to cash a check. When the architects of our republic wrote the magnificent words of the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence, they were signing a promissory note to which every American was to fall heir. This note was a promise that all men, yes, black men as well as white men, would be guaranteed the unalienable rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. It is obvious today that America has defaulted on this promissory note insofar as her citizens of color are concerned. Instead of honoring this sacred obligation, America has given the Negro people a bad check, a check which has come back marked insufficient funds. But we refuse to believe that the Bank of Justice is bankrupt. We refuse to believe that there are insufficient funds in the great vaults of opportunity of this nation. And so we've come to cash this check, a check that will give us upon demand the riches of freedom and the security of justice. We have also come to this hallowed spot to remind America of the fierce urgency of now. This is no time to engage in the luxury of cooling off or to take the tranquilizing drug of gradualism. Now is the time to make real the promises of democracy. Now is the time to rise from the dark and desolate valley of segregation to the sunlit path of racial justice. Now is the time to lift our nation from the quicksands of racial injustice to the solid rock of brotherhood. Now is the time make justice a reality for all of God's children. It would be fatal for the nation to overlook the urgency of the moment. This sweltering summer of the Negro's legitimate discontent will not pass until that is an invigorating autumn of freedom and equality. 1963 is not an end, but a beginning. Those who hoped that the Negro needed to blow off steam and will now be content will have a rude awakening if the nation returns to business as usual. There will be neither rest nor tranquility in America until the Negro is granted his citizenship rights. The whirlwinds of revolt will continue to shake the foundations of our nation until the bright day of justice emerges. But that is something that I must say to my people who stand on the warm threshold which leads into the palace of justice. In the process of gaining our rightful place, we must not be guilty of wrongful deeds. Let us not seek to satisfy our thirst for freedom by drinking from the cup of bitterness and hatred. We must be able to conduct our struggle on the high plane of dignity and discipline. We must not allow our creative protest to degenerate into physical violence. Again and again, we must rise to the majestic heights of meeting physical force with soul force. The marvelous new militancy which has engulfed the Negro community must not lead us to a distrust of all white people. For many of our white brothers, as evidenced by their presence here today, have come to realize that their destiny is inextricably bound to our freedom. We cannot walk alone. As we walk, we must make the pledge that we shall always march ahead. We cannot turn back. There are those who are asking the devotees of civil rights, when will you be satisfied? We can never be satisfied as long as the Negro is the victim of the unspeakable horrors of police brutality. We can never be satisfied. As long as our body is heavy with the fatigue of travel, cannot gain lodging in the motels of the highways and the hotels of the city. We cannot be satisfied as long as a Negro in Mississippi cannot vote and a Negro in New York believes he has nothing for which to vote. No, no, we are not satisfied and we will not be satisfied until justice rolls down like waters and righteousness like a mighty stream. I'm not unmindful that some of you have come here out of great trials and tribulations. Some of you have come fresh from narrow jail cells. Some of you have come from areas where your quest for freedom left you battered by the storms of persecution. Yes. And staggered by the winds of police brutality. You have been the veterans of creative suffering. Continue to work with the faith that honor and suffering is redemptive. Go back to Mississippi. Go back to Alabama. Go back to South Carolina. Go back to Georgia. Go back to Louisiana. Go back to the slums and ghettos of our northern cities, knowing that somehow this situation can and will be changed. Let us not wallow in the valley of despair. I say to you today, my friends, so even though we face the difficulties of today and tomorrow, I still have a dream. It is a dream deeply rooted in the American dream. I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. Yeah. I have a dream that one day on the red hills of Georgia, the sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners will be able to sit down together at the table of brotherhood. I have a dream that one day, even the state of Mississippi, a state sweltering with the heat of injustice, sweltering with the heat of oppression, will be transformed into an oasis of freedom and justice. I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today. I have a dream that one day, down in Alabama, with its vicious racists, with its governor having his lips dripping with the words of interposition and nullification, one day right there in Alabama, little black boys and black girls will be able to join hands with little white boys and white girls as sisters and brothers. I have a dream today. A dream that one day every valley shall be exalted, and every hill and mountain shall be made low. The rough places will be made plain, and the crooked places will be made straight, and the glory of the Lord shall be revealed, and all flesh shall see it together. This is our hope. This is the faith that I go back to the South with. With this faith, we will be able to hew out of the mountain of despair a stone of hope. With this faith, we will be able to transform the jangling discords of our nation into a beautiful symphony of brotherhood. With this faith, we will be able to work together, to pray together, to struggle together, to go to jail together, to stand up for freedom together, knowing that we will be free one day. This will be the day when all of God's children will be able to sing with new meaning, "My country, tears of thee. Sweet land of liberty, of thee I sing. Land where my fathers died, land of the pilgrim's pride. From every mountainside, let freedom ring. And if America is to be a great nation, this must become true. And so let freedom ring. From the prodigious hilltops of New Hampshire, let freedom ring. From the mighty mountains of New York, let freedom ring. From the heightening Alleghenies of Pennsylvania, let freedom ring. From the snow-capped Rockies of Colorado, let freedom ring. From the curvaceous slopes of California. But not only that, Let freedom ring from Stone Mountain of Georgia. Let freedom ring from Lookout Mountain of Tennessee. Let freedom ring from every hill and molehill of Mississippi, from every mountainside. Let freedom ring, and when this happens, when we allow freedom ring, when we let it ring from every village and every hamlet, from every state and every city, we will be able to speed up that day when all of God's children, black men and white men, Jews and Gentiles, Protestants and Catholics, will be able to join hands and sing in the words of the old Negro spiritual, free at last, free at last. Thank God Almighty, we are free at last.
Wow, even 57 years later, the power of that oratory, the power of that message, the way it was delivered, the content, still gives you pause to think and consider, you know, what has transpired with us since that time. Many questions have been asked, and many times the question has been asked, has the dream been achieved? And most recently, within the last, 12 years or so, with the election of Barack Obama as president of the United States, there were some that said that, that event, singular event, was in fact a satisfaction of the dream that Martin Luther King expressed. Now, controversy as it may be, I don't hold with that. I think, it is part of the ongoing process. Just as I think, the Black Lives Matter movement and the Me Too movement and the Never Again student anti-gun movement, all of these elements were part of what Dr. King was talking about, in this speech, about in the need for, our people. And in our people, not just meaning Black Americans. Something else to keep in mind about Dr. King, his message while talking about Black people, or as we were referred to in those days, Negroes, wasn't specific and isolated to the Black community of the day, then or now. Dr. King's message was a universal message of inclusion and understanding and brotherhood and solidarity. And sometimes that gets lost in the dialogue, and people believe that he was speaking for and to Black people only, which, is not the case. And if you go in and do your diligence, as we say, and dig in and read the words of Dr. King, read more of his speeches, read the books that he wrote. I found an article that was written on April 6th, 1968, in the Guardian newspaper in England. And it was a discussion of, the reaction to the death of Dr. King. And, while I won't go into the big details, they had a couple of quotations from the book excerpted, which really speak to the point I was just making. And the book is called Chaos or Community. It was written by Dr. King. It was the last book that he wrote prior to his death. And in this book, one of the quotes that he lists is the follows, and I quote, "The cries of Black power and the riots are not the causes of white resistance, but the consequences of it," close quote. Now, think about that for a second and put it in the context of what we are experiencing today, 50-something years later, with the engagement that is going on nationally as well as locally, in communities, in the disenfranchised communities, in the marginalized communities, in the communities of color, with what the current government is putting out there, and what we are experiencing. So, that was spoken, as I said, 50 something years ago, yet it still has a very strong resonance to where we are today. There was another quote, and again, this article was written literally 4 days after Dr. King had been killed, and excerpted from his book. And as they said, as King wrote in his last book, quote, "The hard cold facts of today indicate that the hope of the people of color in the world may well rest on the American Negro and his ability to reform the structure of racist imperialism from within and thereby turn the technology and wealth of the West to the task of liberating the world from want." Again, words from 57 years ago that could very, very easily be spoken again aloud today. That has not changed. That situation, that need for black people and minorities and people of color and disenfranchised and poor people in the United States of America to take that leadership role in evoking change both in America and in the world still resonates strongly. And it's something that we cannot walk away from, we cannot ignore, nor should it be lost on us, the irony of those words. So, again, something to think about. Going back to the speech, and I will put a link to the full text of the speech on my Facebook page. I will tweet it out from my Twitter account. I encourage you to explore those links, to read the full text of the speech, to gain the full context. And if you have comments or questions, absolutely tweet me back or, post comments on my Facebook page. And I'll give you the links for those prior to the close of the show. But those will be posted out during the course of today so that you have them. One of the early parts of the speech, he talks about, 50 years ago, Abraham Lincoln signed the Emancipation Proclamation, and, how much of a beacon of light and hope it was to the millions of, Negro slaves, enslaved people of the age who had been seared in the flames of withering injustice. He said in the speech, and I quote, "It came as a joyous daybreak to the end of the long night of their captivity." It continues on to talk about what has happened in the time since the Emancipation Proclamation. And again, context this to 1963. So where he talks about 100 years, it's actually, in today's terms, it's 155 years later. 100 years later, the life of the Negro is still badly crippled by the manacles of segregation and the chains of discrimination. 100 years later, the Negro lives on a lonely island of poverty in the midst of a vast ocean of material prosperity. 100 years later, the Negro is still languished in the corners of American society and finds himself in exile in his own land. Again, 50 years ago, it was spoken. 50 years later, it's still relevant. We still struggle under these problems. He talks about how the purpose of this march, and this was a march for jobs, justice, and peace, came to Washington, D.C., and in his words, start the process to get, paid, and I say paid in the sense of getting the wrongs addressed and change happening to correct the problems at the root of that. And he talks about how America has defaulted on that check that was promised, and you can read that as talking about the issue of reparations, which is another hot topic that has, cycled in and out of the conversation and in and out of the discussion over the years, and now is resurfacing again with renewed vigor. We were promised a check, and that check came back from the bank as insufficient funds. So, he calls upon America to make real the promise of democracy, It's a time to rise from the dark and desolate valley of segregation. You know, it's the time to lift our nation from the quicksands of racial injustice. You know, so he goes on and on and on in the first two-thirds of this speech, talking about how America has failed the Negro of that day, which you can interpret to mean, you know, black people, brown people, you know, LGBTQ people, you know, all of the disenfranchised minorities of our country today, you know, are still owed that check, which has come back time and time again from our country as insufficient funds. You know, there will be, you know, continue on, there will be, where was I going? Oh, those who hope that the Negro needed to blow off steam and will now be content will have a rude awakening if the nation returns to business as usual. You know, and this speaks to, in some ways, the fact that although Martin Luther King was a tireless advocate for peace and nonviolent protest and, you know, and engaging with the government without the use of violence, that there was an undercurrent of determination and intent that, you know, was, we will stand up for what is rightfully ours. We will not be, you know, marginalized. We will not be pushed aside. We will not be disenfranchised. There will be neither rest nor tranquility in America until the Negro is granted his citizenship rights. The whirlwinds of revolt will continue to shake the foundations of our nation until the bright days of justice emerge. You can't say it any clearer than that. And in many ways, this was part of the controversy of the time surrounding Dr. King, where many people thought, in some sense, that he was moving away from his advocacy of nonviolence that he had spoken of so long to a more confrontational approach to civil rights. You know, but he tempers it further in the speech, you know, talking about how we must forever continue our struggle on the high plane of dignity and discipline. We must not allow our creative protest to degenerate into physical violence. So, you know, it's still Dr. King. It is still his message of peace through protest, through nonviolent protest. However, the urgency of the time was calling for him to move more and more into a more confrontational approach in it. You know, and, you know, from there, he begins to move forward and talk about how, you know, we cannot be satisfied with the status quo. You know, he says, we cannot turn back. There are those who are asking the devotees of civil rights, when will you be satisfied? We can never be satisfied as long as the Negro is the victim of unspeakable horrors of police brutality. Hello? Hello. That is a straight line lead to the Black Lives Matter, to the movements that we have seen over the last 15 years. Again, remember, this was spoken in 1963, you know, and yet today, these words could be spoken today with the same relevance, the same importance, and the same power that they had that day. You know, so, you know, we have to, you know, as I say on this show, we have to do our diligence. We have to be students of history. We have to understand where we have come from to see where we are going. If we cannot take and assess the era of the 50s and 60s and the struggle that, you know, was waged in this country, primarily by, you know, Black Americans, but not exclusively by Black Americans. I'd be remiss if I didn't talk about, you know, the struggles that, you know, that Latin Americans, Hispanic Americans were facing in terms of their economic and citizenship status, and still continues to this day. I could not, you know, exclude the struggles that Asian Americans faced then and still face in some regards today, or any, you know, ethnic minority group or racial minority group. Those struggles still exist. They are still real, and we must remain diligent in how we address it. So, all right, let's take our break here. Again, if you want to read the speech, I will post a link to it on my Facebook page, facebook.com/firedupradio. And I will also tweet out the link from my Twitter page at @RU Fired Up. And that's through Twitter. Let's take a break. And of course, we can't do this day without celebrating the song that Stevie Wonder brought us, which really kind of made the final push over the top of getting the Martin Luther King holiday enacted. So we'll be right back after the break, and we'll close out with a brief call to action. You're listening to Fired Up. This is Steve. Thank you for being here, and we'll come back right after the break.
Peace, the heart will sing. Thanks to my. dream that you had so long ago that lives in all of the hearts of people.
Taken the nation, you know, in the time, you know, since his unfortunate and too soon assassination and murder. And, you know, it's kind of like when you shine a bright light out into the darkness, the closer you are to the source of the light, the stronger that light is. But as you move away from it, it gets weaker and weaker and weaker till your eyes can't perceive it. But something to keep in mind, light travels infinitely. The message that Dr. King gave us and what he left with us also travels infinitely. We may not be able to see it as clearly as we can now, or as we could then rather, but that message, those effects, like ripples on a pond, continue to move outward from the source. So, you know, we continue to have hope, and that's what we really need to bring away from the Martin Luther King holiday, is that it still inspires us. It still gives us that hope. So let's carry that forward. Let's not just make it a one-day thing. Let's make it part of our call to action every day, every year as we go forward. Let's continue the hope. Let's continue the action to make that hope a reality. Let's continue to live the change we want to see. Thanks for being with me here on this special show, Fire It Up. This is Steve. You're listening on WJMSradio.com. I will be back next week, and we will get back into the mechanics and the machinery of our political system. Enjoy the rest of your day. Stop, reflect, take a moment, think about what Dr. Martin Luther King has meant to us, and what he continues to mean to us. We'll talk to you all next week. Take care. Have a great day.
Our hearts tell us something.